With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I am your host, Andy Mitz. Today we are previewing our final opponent preview of the summer here, talking about the season finale for the Kansas Jayhawks, going on the road to face newcomer to the conference, the Cincinnati Bearcats. To help me talk about that team and what they can expect in their first season here in the Big 12, I have joining me from the 10-12 Podcast Network fellow hosts here on the network, Justin and Steven from the Viva La Cats podcast, talking obviously about the Cincinnati Bearcats. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing good. We actually were just recording as well, so we got some fresh voices in here.
Andy, I'm fired up. It's football season finally. Week one is finally here, and I cannot wait.
Oh, I know. It's so nice to actually be able to talk about real football and what's actually going to be happening, as opposed to like they still have to go through fall camp and we think this person might be good. And yeah, now it's here. We're preparing for games.
Yep.
I usually try to like to try to get all of these previews done before the first week, but got a little bit delayed this year. And hey, we're going to finish them all up. I definitely do not know nearly enough about all of the new additions to the conference here, but glad to have you guys on. So let's talk about that first, right? Coming to the Big 12 is obviously a huge step for you guys, having just been in the college football playoff a couple years ago. Lots of turnover on the team, lots of stuff happening, right, for Cincinnati. Coming to a new home in the Big 12 is obviously a big difference, but what is the kind of feeling around the program, you know, for this happening, and what are some early expectations for how competitive Cincinnati can be in the Big 12?
I'll let you take it, Steve.
So I'll use the term measured excitement. There is definitely excitement for being in the Big 12, being able to join the conference, being able to be back in the in-club after being spending about a decade out in the American. Used to be in the Big East. People might not remember that back in the day. So, you know, UC has had some of that power conference exposure in the past, and now it's nice to be back in the light. But I think there is some measured optimism, maybe not as much as there would have been if, you know, Luke Fickell had stayed and not gone to Wisconsin and the coaching change and transfer portal and everything else that happened in the offseason did not happen. People do like the new coach, Scott Satterfield from Louisville and Appalachian State. He has been doing all the right things, saying all the right things on the trail leading up to this season. But Justin, I think it's just the step up that we were expecting without the coach that we were expecting to be there.
Yeah. And that's honestly the hardest part. I mean, realistically, you go into this and if you have Luke Fickell, I mean, you talk about the season projections. A lot of people are putting us at, you might hit bowl eligibility if you're lucky, versus with Luke Fickell, we're talking about walking in here. It's like, all right. I mean, could we play with Kansas State? Could we possibly find our way into the Big 12 championship at the end of the year? Expectations completely fell flat after that. So change there.
And as you know, Philip Slavin, the host of the 10-12 podcast, was talking with me. you know, Cincinnati's probably the team that we know the least about, right? Because there's so much turnover. They weren't in the Big 12, so they're taking that step up in competition. You know, brand new coach, like all of those things in and of itself would potentially make it a difficult year, right? Like stepping up to the Big 12, coming from the American. And, you know, I do like some of the teams are in the American, but I think if everybody's being honest, it is a fairly significant step up to Big 12 competition. You know, all the transfer portal stuff happening with all the guys that were leaving, you know, and typically when a team from a lower conference goes to, you know, something like the college football playoff, or even like, I mean, TCU had the same sort of thing happen to them right after this last year, where you go to the college football playoff unexpectedly, you're going to lose a whole bunch of guys who have opportunities all of a sudden that they didn't have before. And then, of course, brand new coach. A lot of brand new coaches struggle anyway in their first year on campus. So you have all three of those things coming together. And, you know, I mean, I have Cincinnati. I just put out a power rankings over at Blue Wings Rising just a couple days ago. And I have Cincinnati down at the bottom more or less just because I don't know what to think about them, right? Like, there's so many different things that stack up and make you want to say, they're going to have a hard time this year. But we've seen teams come out of nowhere. You know, we saw a TCU last year that everybody expected to be 9th or 10th in the Big 12. Make it to the championship game and make it to the college football championship game. Like, we've seen some really weird stuff. So, you know, looking at, you already talked about how Scott Satterfield is like kind of saying the right things. How much, from what you can tell, has been changed, or how much do you think is different this year for how Satterfield tries to approach it as opposed to what Luke Fickell is doing? Or is there not enough information yet to know?
So, I just take from what he said at Media Days. He said, you know, he kind of tried to lay it out there and lay the expectations really low and said that they're trying to implement the offense. Obviously, not many returning starters from last year's team on this year's two deep. And he really tried to talk about how good the defense was going to be, tried to promote how Emory Jones could come in and run his offense. But I think he was kind of trying to set the expectations low from what he said at Media Day, when obviously the Bearcats were picked 13th. He's not in the same situation as West Virginia's Neil Brown, who is trying to save his job. And I've heard the term YOLO Neil Brown and trust the climb for them, which is funny, obviously. But, you know, for Scott Satterfield, I think it's different. I think he kind of got a raw deal at Louisville. He kind of had some factors that led to him being part of that and fans not really wanting him to be around. I think it's just a fresh start for him. And as I said, measured excitement, people were not really all in on him when he was announced. There was not much fanfare around it. And it's taken a while for people to really accept him as the coach at UC. But, you know, if he can deliver results on the field, then everybody loves him again. And I think what we fans are banking on as fans of the program is just understanding how good the team has been under multiple different head coaches over the past 15 to 20 years. And we obviously understand Big 12 step up in competition, really good league compared to the American. I just think that it's going to take some time, and we are trying to be optimistic as we always are before the start of a new season. And with the coaches being transferred in and out, changed all the time, and the program still being good, that's our hope that Scott Satterfield can play on that. But I think he's trying to set the expectations really low for year one.
Well, and I mean, to be honest, anytime you have a coach like Luke Fickell that moves on, right? Like, there's always going to be some uncertainty and uneasiness going to the new guy until he actually does something to make people think that it's a step forward as opposed to a potential step back.
Well, and that's a, I think you make a good point there too, because if you look back on it, like, I wouldn't say that every single coach that has come through here has necessarily felt like an absolute home run hire the second it happened. I mean, look back at Brian Kelly, look back at Butch Jones, look back at Tommy Tuberville, given his current circumstance there, look back at Luke Fickell. When all these guys come in, like, you know, I think Tuberville maybe being the exception given his past before that, a lot of these guys, it's not like they have like this whole rap sheet of like, this is, you know, the creme de la creme coach that you're looking for in your search. It's usually the guy who is not really on your radar or somewhere back towards the end of it that we end up hiring. And 9 times out of 10, these guys have coached up enough to go to another, you know, stronger conference, to go up to a stronger team, quote unquote. And, you know, it's kind of sucks being the stepping stone a lot. You know, and sometimes they'll coach up all the way to going to Senate. I mean, you never know what will happen. Like, it's a very interesting world that we live in. But regardless, like, you know, we live in times where for Cincinnati, this has been a recurring cycle, and we've still found the success in the light of that constant change. And so I think there is still a lot of upside for Satterfield in that.
Yeah. I mean, who would have known that, you know, college football coach was a, you know, minor league system for United States Senator. So
who would have known?
It's funny though, because you talk about, right, you know, being a stepping stone and having that unfortunate kind of designation. And Kansas was that way for quite a long time. Everyone just kind of assumed that Kansas was going to get a coach that was going to come and was going to show something and then was going to leave after a couple of years. And I think there was a lot of worry, right, when the Wisconsin job that Luke Fickell left for came open, a lot of people were concerned that, you know, Lance Leipold was going to be heavily tempted by that job, or even the Nebraska job. Like, he had those opportunities. And I think what makes fans here love Lance Leipold even more is the fact that he had that opportunity to leave and decided, no, this is where I want to put down my roots. This is where I want to be long term. And I think every program is looking for that guy who's going to do that. I'm not sure if Satterfield's going to be good enough to do that here, right? But I think a lot of people thought they had that in Luke Fickell at Cincinnati.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing for any Kansas fans that are listening to that and finding hope in Leipold. I hope for your sake that he sticks around and there's success. But as prior warning signs have given us, Luke Fickell also took a flight all the way up to East Lansing and talked up the whole Michigan State job, turned that down, came back. And we're like, that was, I think, the biggest kicker for us is like that offseason. We're thinking Luke Fickell, oh my God, he could go. He's going to go to Michigan State. It's the Big Ten. This is what he wants. Big Ten East. He can punch up. He can play with all these big teams. And then he ended up rejecting it and staying. So that was the point, I think, for a lot of us fans were like, okay, if he can reject that offer, the only thing he's going to take is Ohio State. And we said that for a really, really long time. Turn around, you know, one, two seasons later, and here we are. And, you know, now he's up there and we're in a new system. So,
you know, it's funny because I think Iowa State fans for the longest time said that the only job Matt Campbell would leave for would be Ohio State. So I think a lot of people think that their coaches are only going to go to Ohio State, but no, you know, I mean, I think Kansas fans kind of have had that kind of gut punch happen before, right? With Roy right. Williams, where, you know, he said he wasn't taking the North Carolina job. And then a couple years later, it became open again. And he's, you know, his famous quote, I don't give a shit about North Carolina. And then 3 days later, he's, you know, accepting the North Carolina job. So it's like Kansas had that, right, where a coach that a lot of people loved left because he had an opportunity to go to one of the few programs that would ever be able to get him to leave. And yes, it's worked out well for Kansas with Bill Self. But, you know, that's one of those things where you don't really know what's going to happen. Like, the best hope is that you find a coach that's able to at least continue some of the success. Unfortunately, the bad timing of all of this happening as you were coming off of a roster draining, you know, run to the college football playoff and, you know, dealing with that kind of now, granted, last year was not a horrible year. It just wasn't quite up to the standards that I think a lot of people were expecting. So like coming out of last year, How much of that do you think, like in terms of those performances, whether it's good or bad, how much of that do you think is actually going to carry over with a brand new head coaching staff?
So with the new coaching staff, we actually got to see what they would be like against the current team when the new coaching staff and old coaching staff had to play each other in a bowl game. Obviously, a lot of players were missing on both sides. Scott Satterfield was not part of either team's preparation for that bowl game. But I drew from last year's team and last year's Louisville team the fact that their defensive stats were pretty much identical. And obviously, Louisville playing in a much harder conference than Cincinnati. But our defensive coordinator, Brian Brown, has come over from Louisville. He's brought a couple players over. And obviously, there's a preseason All-American on the defensive side of the ball. There's a couple big returning roster guys. We call our defensive line jokingly the Mafia because we have the Godfather in the middle, Dante Corleone, but a couple other guys, Utah State transfer, Daniel Grisiak, Virginia transfer, who's been on the team for a year now, Jawan Briggs. The defensive line should be good. We've got some good linebackers as well. Deshaun Pace was playing safety, but he's being brought down to more of the rover. They call it star position. But with that defense being mostly intact from last year and a couple of additional transfers brought in, that gives me confidence as a fan to say, okay, we understand that these Big 12 teams and our new conference are very talented. But if we can have the same defensive output and same defensive levels that that Louisville defense had, we could probably be competitive. It all just depends on what the offense can do.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to, you know, jumping off that point too. I think when you look at the way that the whole staff changes over, you look at the way that the roster shifts a lot, there are a lot of question marks. I think most of that, you know, those question marks, like Steven mentioned, those are all really going to be on the offensive side of the ball. And it's really, how does that offensive line gel? How do all these wide receivers, who were returning one wide receiver in total, how does that wide receiver room gel? Our running backs, we had talked about this on our show tonight. It's a stable of guys that really all a decent amount of minutes, even given that they've been in at second, third string slots. I mean, we just had those opportunities. So there are a lot of question marks still on that side of the ball, but it really does come down to how much more of an advantage can Scott Satterfield and his offensive scheme give you on the offensive side of the ball. But with so many question marks on the roster side, I think I'm more questionative of, I'm questioning less Scott Satterfield's offensive scheme and more questioning how much is that team going to gel in season one versus defensively, like Steven mentioned, you're basically, you have a baseline that is very similar to the way Luke Fickell's defense was performing, but like he said, also in a harder conference. So you do have that kind of like level of playing field that you can really measure that against. And on top of that, you have the Power Five experience with Satterfield. So I think that does give you an advantage. And especially like we've talked about too, week two, you're playing against Pitt. Scott Satterfield has played Pitt. He knows what they're going to throw at him. So like, I think you're going to have some of those advantages coming out. It's just then once you get to the Big 12, are you going to be able to punch up with so many question marks?
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, the defenses in the Big 12, it's kind of funny because most people think that the Big 12 doesn't play defense. And I think a lot of the defenses have been kind of underrated, especially the last few years. But talking about that defense, right? So, like, who are some of the main contributors you're expecting to kind of anchor that defense? Is there a spot on the defense roster-wise that you think is a lot stronger or a lot weaker than elsewhere? Like, what's the best way that you would describe this defense and what it tries to do?
So actually today, Juwan Briggs, as I mentioned, he's one of the defensive ends for the Bearcats. He mentioned that they're trying to play football instead of fitball. I did like that quote because last year our defense, obviously trying to fit holes, stop gaps, try to stay with their man. UC did play a lot of 3-3-5 under the Luke Fickell tenure, but now they're looking to play a little bit more traditional 3-4 defensive style with a stand-up offensive linebacker in Daniel Grzyniak, who will be taking most of the plays to try and get into the backfield. So I think the one weak spot that Justin and I have mentioned is cornerback and the safeties as well. There is some returning production, but it's just not at the level that we would want it to be. And obviously we've been spoiled at Cincinnati over the last couple of years with Sauce Gardner and Kobe Bryant. A couple other good cornerbacks and safeties have come through as well. And we've been very lucky to have that. They jokingly called it a no-fly zone in Nippert, but we've been lucky to have that. I think that's just going to be the problem. And obviously when you're going against Big 12 quarterbacks and wide receivers, that is that's something to watch out for. I do think though that the strength will be the defensive line. We're very deep on that end. Like I mentioned, Dante Corleone, preseason All-American, Juwan Briggs on the end. We also have Eric Phillips on the other end, on the left end, and Daniel Grzyniak, Utah State transfer who had 9 sacks last year, going to be the stand-up offensive outside linebacker.
So, I mean, you talked about defensive line kind of being, you know, the anchor. I think most teams that have the strong defensive line are much stronger, you know, with defense up the middle. And, you know, teams that like to play in the middle of the field. I do wonder because the Big 12, especially Kansas, but the Big 12 in general has a few teams that like to play out on the perimeter, like to play out on the sidelines. How worried are you about the sideline to sideline defense as opposed to, you know, like, I understand being strong up the middle, especially because of that defensive line, but how worried are you about teams that can play on the outside, like the Jayhawks can?
I mean, I think it's definitely a concern for sure, because I mean, that's an understatement. I think it is definitely an area that we have noticed has, you know, it can cause some problems if we're not prepared for that. And now, like Steven mentioned, with the loss of some of those, you know, college football playoff run guys, now it's, we don't know exactly if these guys are going to be able to play up to speed, much less to play against much, much harder opponents in schemes that are much more wear you down play after play, can do the same thing and still run straight through you. And so I'd say I'm really worried about that. And I think the deep ball too, because I know that the deep ball is something that is to be feared in the Big 12 too. And so you look at some of those games where, you know, you're looking at like a TCU or a Kansas State throwing up like 50 in a game, but the opponent is throwing up like 45. Like those kind of games, we traditionally have not paced out in those. If an opponent's going to put up like 40 points on the Bearcats defense, the offense usually is not there to keep pace. That's generally how it's gone for us. And very rarely has that been the case. I mean, the Bearcats have held most teams to about between 20 to like 24 points tops. And that's some of like even the best offensive teams we've still found a way to throttle. And so I think that when you start getting to the outs, if we're struggling there, teams are going to find a very quick way to expose us. And I think they're just going to start, you know, utilizing the passing game much more than the running game. And if that's the case and they figure us out, we might be screwed.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
you're muted, Steve.
I would say, unfortunately for you guys, there are plenty of Big 12 teams that love the passing game, and the Jayhawks are definitely one of them. Yeah. You know, Jalen Daniels, Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year, or preseason Offensive Player of the Year. You know, they have a decent amount of running game stuff as well, but, you know, I think one of Daniels' big claim to fame last year was how many different guys he kind of got the ball around to. Obviously, it's at the end of the year, so it's either going to be, you know, teams are either going to be beat up by going through the Big 12, and that could be a problem there, or, you know, they're going to have time to gel and figure out what they really are. So, like, it's hard to kind of predict how that particular game is going to go at this point in the season, because we don't know what kind of injuries are going to be. We don't know how well guys are going to develop or anything like that. But I think the fact that the Jayhawks are not unique in liking to go deep, you know, unfortunately, it sounds like Cincinnati's one of the few teams in the Big 12 that is not really equipped to handle tons of deep throws, and we've got a lot of good Big 12 coaches that are probably going to take advantage of that. So, lots of teams like to get in shootouts here in the Big 12. Hopefully it's something you guys can help manage. You know, you won't have to worry about that with Iowa State. I can at least say that. So.
Yeah, not too concerned over there on that side.
Yeah. It's just, I think that's where you're going to see the talent deficit this year coming up from the American to the Big 12. We just have a lot of starters that would have started and did start in the American last year. I just don't know if they're at Big 12 quality. We saw it in the Arkansas game last year. These guys were kind of getting burned a little bit, and that was week one, fresh legs and everything. So if that's what it's going to look like in the Big 12, we may be in for a long season on the defensive side of the ball.
I think a lot of SEC teams would, you know, or a lot of SEC fans would dispute the fact that it's going to be like that, but go ahead.
Well, and I would say too, I think one of the key things that I focused on last season, and I think now that we've had so much change, has been very easy to forget. The week by week, every single game last year was, oh my God, can we just have some amount of consistency? Can we be consistent on the offensive side of the ball? Defensively, we were fairly sound. We were letting up, you know, like 20 points to like a USF that was just like garbage, like those kind of things, like we were not expecting to do. But it's one of those things where you're looking forward to the Big 12, and realistically, it's like if you can't have like your 40, 50 point weeks, I really doubt that we're going to be having much of any of those. I think we're going to have a lot of rock fights this year. I think your shootouts are really going to be the rock fights. That's just how it's going to go. This is a defensively set team. This is how this team's identity has been built for years on end. And I would say that goes back even, you know, farther. I wouldn't say that Tuberville's identity was maybe either or. It's kind of foggy at this point, but from where this team has been moving forward, that's a earmark for us. And so for that milestone, I think that it's going to be really important for us to like figure out if we can have a consistent offense again, because we just did not have it last year. We were letting way too many teams play with us until the fourth quarter. And teams that traditionally in 2020 and 21, you know, we were keeping the throttle down, you know, end to end, and we could let off in the fourth quarter and still be fine and have a three touchdown cushion. Last year, you know, it's a one score game into the fourth with a team that you traditionally have no issue with. And so now we're moving forward. Are those same guys that have stuck around going to be able to do the same thing, or are they going to be able to be better? And offensively, I mean, it's a clean slate, really.
Yeah. So I do want to dive into the offense a little bit more, but before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. The Rock Chalk Podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best-dressed fan this season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. They have over 30 different schools to choose from, including the Kansas Jayhawks. They have a fantastic Jalen Daniels shirt that came out at the beginning of this year, and they have a whole bunch of other fantastic KU stuff. If you're a K-State fan or you have a K-State fan in your family, they have that stuff too. They have a bunch of different schools with some fantastic apparel. If you use promo code 101215, that is the word TEN1215, that will get you 15% off of all items that are not on sale. It's a fantastic deal. Head on over to charliehustle.com and make sure you pick up your stuff today. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back. I am here with Justin and Steven of the Viva La Cats podcast here on the Big 12, on the 1012 Podcast Network, talking about Cincinnati. Offense is completely brand new, and that was kind of the indication I got from my, you know, limited amount of research I did before we started this episode. But like, you talk about it being brand new. Is it coaching, like scheme wise? Is it personnel wise? Is it both? Is it who knows or what?
It's a full mark, I think.
Yeah, it's everything. So obviously, brand new coach with Scott Satterfield. He will be calling the plays this year. We did have Tom Manning from Iowa State be on the staff for a little bit after he was let go by Matt Campbell. And then
what, like 2 months, a month?
It may not have even been that long. So, but that doesn't really affect my thoughts on the team too much, just because Scott Satterfield will be calling the plays. He does love a running and passing offense with a dual threat quarterback. He loves to run a lot of outside zone read and running plays. And he does like to try and get the ball out in the air a little bit. I think the knock on him though, was that while Louisville did have some good offenses, it was based a lot around their cornerback Malik Cunningham last year. And if Emory Jones can play up to or better than his best ball at Florida, then I think we can play, can be better on that offensive side of the ball. What concerns me is the when he was replaced at Florida and at Arizona State, obviously replaced by Anthony Richardson. Arizona State, he was not really replaced by anyone that was better than him. So that is somewhat of a concern that he's on his third school and trying to make the offense, learn another offense and make it gel before his final season. So there is, there was some talk about him in spring ball and in fall camp that he was focusing on passing more. He wanted to stay in the pocket, not just take the easy way out and run for a first down. So that was interesting to see him trying to develop, make throws, make passes. And he did talk about today in his press conference that he believes, and his QB coach agreed with him, that this is the best wide receiver room he's been a part of. There's a couple Florida transfers in that. There's one Florida transfer in that wide receiver room. There's a couple there's a transfer from Louisville, UConn, the Florida State. No, I'm sorry, Arizona State as well in that.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of, like we said, turnover in that wide receiver room. And I think that's the question mark as well. To me, the thing that really hinges on it, and what I want to see this Saturday when the Bearcats take on Eastern Kentucky, is how the offensive line gels. The offensive line was the only probably weak point of the Luke Fickell era to me. Whenever we would play teams that had good to great defensive lines, they could not hold up. For whatever reason, we just could not get that level of athlete on the offensive line to compete against those bigger defensive lines. And in the Big 12, we know we're going to be going up against some big boys on those defensive lines. So to me, I think as long as the offensive line can hold up, we may be able to get some production out of this offense. If the offensive line does not hold up and we're starting three transfers on the offensive line, then it's, again, another recipe for disaster.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like fun. I know how horrible offensive line issues can be. I mean, Jalen Daniels for KU is the best example. He came in as a true freshman behind an abysmal offensive line, got sacked the most by any Kansas quarterback in a really long time, and looked awful. Like, you could see the flashes. Like, he could be able to do something, but he was having to make split-second decisions right after the ball was snapped about whether he was going to take off and run or not, because the offensive line couldn't hold up at all. And then, you know, the last few years under Leipold, the offensive line's been great, and it's given them opportunities to kind of do what they want to do. So that is going to be kind of a huge thing. Unfortunately, offensive line is the one thing that can completely derail your offense in a way that you don't really know what you have elsewhere. Because if they never let anything get started, you're never going to know if anything else is good enough once that gets fixed. So for your guys' sake, I hope that that is, even if it's a weakness, it's not such a weakness that, you know, the offense can't really do much. All right. So I mean, other spots on the offense, is there a spot about the offense that you feel really good about? I mean, I'm not super familiar with your guys' quarterback. I'm not really kind of super familiar with the running backs you guys have on the roster, but with so many good running backs in the Big 12, like, I wouldn't be shocked to find out that you guys have, you know, two guys that were, you know, all American, like all American Conference, you know, last year or something like that. Or I mean, even all American, you know, like the nationwide one. Man, it is so weird trying to talk about, you know, like all conference honors for a team that came from the American Conference.
Yeah, I'm sure that could be very confusing too. I mean, we're gonna have to get used to a lot of the Big 12 conference honor names too. I think where I find the most confidence is definitely in the running back room. It's kind of mentioned before. It's like, you've got four guys in that running back room. As far as depth goes, kind of in order of what has been listed out according to the unofficial two deep depth chart. So take it for what you will. You got Corey Kiner, who's listed as your starter. He's a junior at this point, he's a Cincinnati local. Great kid, went to LSU at first. Recruited him super, super hard for Cincinnati. Thought we were going to get him. Ended up going there. Brian Kelly came in, derailed the whole thing, and then he ended up at Cincinnati. Then you also have Miles Montgomery, Ryan Montgomery, and Ethan Wright. And so these guys, I think, are all very interesting. Miles Montgomery, Ryan Montgomery got a lot of share of the ball last year. We had what I don't even know what you would call the system. It was basically like flip, roll a three-sided die if that existed, and just every play and see who can go out to play that play. I mean, there were so many guys rotating in one game for the running backs that it was just like constant motion. And I think it made it hard for any of the guys to really get momentum and start to like kind of gel into that. But with that said, you had a guy like Charles McClelland, who was really kind of your bell cow last year, followed by all of these guys who you could argue you wanted as a starter. And all of them are all very quality running backs. Ethan Wright had actually played as a running back, and I believe last year he actually transitioned to a linebacker. I'm trying to remember what position. Yeah, it was a linebacker. And then now he's back to a running back again. And so, like, you have, like, guys who have that talent, and we have that ability. You've seen it in the returns. You've seen it in some of the late games when they're going in at the second, third string when you're burning some time. But you've seen some of these guys take reps against first team, and they're all ready to go. And so I think, you know, injuries, albeit, could be an issue. You could have, you know, some guys just might not have it that day. You have one and a two and a three and a four to throw in there that you can feel really confident about going forward. So I think in that area, we feel really confident. And then again, at quarterback, I mean, I think Emery, like Steve had mentioned before, it's going to be interesting to see how he figures it out, because, you know, he is on his now third stop, and you're trying to figure out if this is going to be the one that works for him. And we all obviously hope that it does. But I do think it's very interesting having a guy who is very much set in a similar scheme that Scott Satterfield is used to. Of course, you had Ben Bryant, who was winning the starting spot last year, ended up going to Northwestern. And so now you're left with Emory Jones as your starter. I believe that probably just happened after beating him out of camp, I would in spring ball. And so I think that's kind of where we've led to this point, that Emory Jones is going to be your far and away guy. But again, with Lichtenberg, with Drogish, you have some guys who have a bit more of a different arsenal to offer you. And so I think if there's are any issues there, you still have some options, but we just don't know too much. Even with Lichtenberg having been here for a handful of years, we don't really know much about him other than that he's a good passer, but we just haven't seen much of him. And with Drogish being a freshman, I think there's a lot of potential there too. But aside from that, you know, wide receiver room, none of us have seen any of these guys play in a Bearcats uniform or all together. So it's really all up in the air.
That's fair. All right. So let's go ahead and take a look then at the schedule, because I don't know that I would say that the schedule makers did you guys any favors.
I think they did. I would say that
that's
they
the
did.
Thing. I think we got a cake schedule year one. I think we are getting lucky, and we're still not going to be that great. So
in that case, then no, I'm curious though. Then about which teams, like, I mean, I guess I could understand, you know, your two final road games being at Houston and at West Virginia, two other teams that are expected to be not great this year, but. You know, I look at the schedule, and I don't know that I would necessarily call it a cakewalk. Especially at the beginning of that schedule, it looks like it could be potentially an issue. And then, you know, senior day against a Kansas Jayhawks offense that is going to be absolutely ridiculous this year. We'll see how well their defense is able to kind of step up, but at the very least, that last game is looking to be a shootout. I mean, so, you know, at least everyone will give the fans a show at the end of the year. But like,
here, I got four words for you here.
Go ahead.
No Texas, no TCU, no Texas Tech, no Kansas State. You're
okay,
basically your
fair.
Top four
that's
teams.
Fair. That's fair.
And you get none of them. Not road, not home. You get none of them. I will and take that week.
I don't want to anger any Kansas Jayhawk fans out there, by the way. I did not mean cakewalk is easy. I just meant we have a comparative Big 12 schedule missing those four teams that Justin mentioned.
Oh, yeah. No. That makes a lot of sense. I was looking at, like, you know, your first game in the Big 12 is against Oklahoma, who is like looking for something this year. Like, you know, you have to go to Provo, sure. You know, like you have, I think, some potentially difficult games on there. But yeah, to your point, right. You don't face any of the four teams that are probably up in the, you know, expected to be, you know, like you miss out on four of the top five teams if you're looking at what most people expect the conference to look like. So
I'm expecting it, our season, really, if you're looking at a graph, is going to go like this. It's going to go, yay, 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 oh, shit, yay, yeah, yeah, okay. Like, I think it's just going to start to ride it out towards the end of the year. But, I mean, and I think there's going to be, you know, it could be trade one win for a loss the next week. It could be, you know, you stack two, but then you lose two. Like, that I realistically think is how the schedule shakes out. But I think a lot of people, a lot of the dissenting voices have said, like, okay, you know, you win your non-conference, you do okay there, and then, like, you get blasted in the first few weeks. You sneak one in here, and then you sneak one in at the end of the season. I think it's going to be much more up and down than that. But I also don't see many runs happening this year.
No, that's fair. Like, it's going to be difficult, I think, for you guys this year. One, because you're not familiar with a lot of these teams. But then also, you know, kind of like I was saying, you get smacked up front with some fairly difficult, and you know, say what you will about the Iowa State offense, that defense is going to be good this year because they're good every year. Right. Yeah. And so, like, you know, that's a game that I could see being a, you know, 7-6 final or something like that, just because it's so ridiculous. Like, their offense is awful, and they lost their best running back and their starting quarterback to this whole gambling scandal. So it's like, you know, you're going to be, and you're playing that in, you know, game six. So it's not like it's, you know, late in the schedule after they've developed a bunch of stuff. It's enough for both of you guys to get your legs under you. But
it is after the bye week. So we do have that advantage.
That's true. It is after your bye week. I don't think it's after theirs, though. So
right.
I should be wrong, for us. But yes, that would be good for you guys. Yeah, it's not, because they face TCU the week before.
They're going to be tired.
Yeah, yeah. They get to host TCU.
The defense
is going to
be worn down.
Right. They get to host TCU, but then they have to come down to, come over to Cincinnati. I'm so used to Iowa State having to go down to basically everybody in the conference that it's, you know, a little weird for them to not have to come south. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Just on the schedule, I do think that Oklahoma game is going to be tough. I think that will be your welcome to the Big 12 moment in that game, especially if that game is going to be the Big Noon Saturday game, primetime Fox game of the week, as was reported. And we just get smacked in the mouth. That would definitely be a welcome to the conference moment. Justin and I, Andy, are actually going up to the BYU game to support the Bearcats. So that should be fun, but also going to BYU cross country on our Friday night does not sound like an opportune thing for the Bearcats. So like you mentioned, Iowa State after the bye, Baylor, I don't necessarily feel confident about. Dave Aranda, I have a lot of respect for. He's going to have a good team this year. He's a good coach. Oklahoma State, I don't think you're going to go into Stillwater and beat them the first time you go there. So it really comes down to, like you said, those last three games. If you can beat both Houston and West Virginia on the road, you may have a chance at gaining bowl eligibility, albeit against a tough Kansas team and a coach that I really respect in Lance Leipold in that final week. I'm just very interested to see what happens in the middle there, because I do think Cincinnati can be better than, like I said, West Virginia and Houston, especially if one or both of those teams do not have coaches. I actually listened to you, Philip, and Jamie on the 10-12 podcast talking about the over-under of 1.5 coaches to be fired. And I do think if things go poorly this year at Houston, it's possible. West Virginia, they have a lot of institutional stuff going on, but Houston is possible. So
think West Virginia is possible, but I will admit that the institutional stuff could kind of override, because last year they were ready to fire him, but they couldn't because he cost too much. Now,
yeah. I mean, at this point, why not go for a clean slate on your two biggest programs?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, it's just one of those, like, I do think that there is a lot of teams in the Big 12 that have an opportunity to have new coaches, whether it's because they, you know, play poorly enough this year that they move on, or, you know, like, for, you know, you could have some teams that play really well. If Baylor has a really good year, I could see an SEC team trying to poach Aranda back, you know, back over to the SEC or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of intriguing games, I think. I think at this point, obviously, you expect, you know, to win against Eastern Kentucky and win against Miami of Ohio. That game at Pitt is going to be extremely difficult. I find it hilarious if it's on the CW network, though. I will say that. I don't really know why it's on the CW network, but especially given the fact that there was so much talk about, you know, the CW becoming the home of Pac-12 broadcasts over the course of the year, like over the course of the summer, I find that oddly, well, very odd. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's definitely games where you guys have an opportunity to kind of jump up. I would not be shocked to see you guys at, you know, 5-7 or 5-6 coming into the game against Kansas. You know, I also could see if some things broke your way, because like Oklahoma State, they are one of those teams that are either going to be really good or really bad. And so, you know, Kansas benefited last year from them being really bad when they came to Lawrence and just wiped the floor with them. I don't know that you're going to have a similar situation, but they have so much new stuff as well that it's hard to know what they're going to be this year. So, I mean, I think you guys have a fairly good shot, but the problem, of course, being that we don't really know anything right now about how well they're going to play here in conference. So,
well, and isn't that like the burning question? You know, that's
well, right. So let's get into
killing Steve and I all season.
Right. Let's get into that burning question. Do you guys have a prediction for how you think this season's going to go, whether it's record or, you know, a breakout player or something like that? Like, what is the prediction that you're willing to make for this Cincinnati season?
So I'm going to couch this. There, we did have a scheduled release show where we both projected the Bearcats to go 8-4. That may have been a little bit optimistic, just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. So I do think that
that was like back in March, though. May
schedule release. That was February.
Way back. We've been humbled since then.
So I do think, though, that we can go 6-6. I think that's the goal, is to hit that over and go 6-6. We will have a couple toss-up games, like you mentioned as well, the Oklahoma State game, Iowa State. I do think we have a chance against Pitt just because of Satterfield's record against them while he was at Louisville. And if their quarterback situation doesn't really work out, I could potentially see Cincinnati pulling that one out in the end. I do agree that there are four games that you could see as wins, obviously Eastern Kentucky, Miami. I feel confident in our chances against West Virginia and Houston, and it's just about finding two more. So I do think 6-6 is there, but like I mentioned earlier, the measured excitement. I don't think people would be upset. I saw our friends from the Sons of UCF podcast joking, or not? No, they were not joking. They were being serious.
They were being dead serious.
They would be upset with a losing conference record this year. And I don't know. We have some beef with UCF, but I'm just thinking, you know, you got to measure your expectations from the league that we were in to where we were at now. So
I mean, see UCF really, though, does claim a national title. So like.
You know, yeah, yeah.
Yes, and they were actually undefeated that year, but like, you know, we know that they're much more willing to claim things that they may not necessarily actually deserve to have. So, yes, I will be taking shots at pretty much everybody in the conference. You're all here, so we get to take shots at everybody. So, but you know, I also listened to a BYU podcast that was talking about their schedule, and they went through and literally talked themselves into BYU going 12-0 this year. So I don't think UCF fans have the market cornered on unbridled optimism that has absolutely no place being there. So then again, the name of their podcast is Hype Train. So, you know, it kind of makes sense that they're going to hype up their team quite a bit. So, but yeah, I mean, so this is, you know, I'm really excited for these games kind of coming on. I'm super excited to see what these new teams all bring to the Big 12. So before we get out of here, just last thing I'll ask you guys, what is something about the Cincinnati Bearcats, whether it's the school, the program, or whatever, that you think that Kansas fans should know coming into the year?
Oh, sorry, I cut out at the end there.
Oh, no, sorry. It's just something that you think Kansas fans should know coming into the year.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to know anything about the Bearcats, especially if you're considering that road trip to Clifton and coming into Cincinnati, campus it's beautiful. It's your football stadium, all your athletic programs, their homes are set dead center of campus, which I think creates a very cool environment, which I think is very independent of a lot of other schools. Very few schools nowadays actually get to have their football stadiums on their campus, much less dead center. And so it's a very cool effect where people, you know, sort of gravitate from all ends of campus. People gravitate from all corners of the city. Very close by, you also have downtown Cincinnati. So if you're looking to make a road trip, that's something that I would definitely earmark as a good one to do. I know it is a bit of a trek for Kansas fans, given the Big 12 landscape, but it's definitely worth it if you're thinking about it and can travel over Thanksgiving weekend to Cincinnati for any reason. But
yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you've heard all the jokes about obviously the chili and just, you know, the us being in Kentucky and not in Cincinnati, not in Ohio. There's a lot of different things that our friends at UCF like and other places like to razz on us about. But I would just say that just the fan base is just incredibly excited to be, like I said, back in this big stage. And Saturdays at Nippert are very special. I was lucky enough to work for the team as well as be a fan ever since I can remember. And just to see this program go from when I was six going to games when there might have been 2,000 people in the stands to 2021 for that conference championship game with a full house, completing that perfect regular season, people storming the field. It's just been an amazing ride to see how much this program has grown just in my lifetime and with the heights that we've reached and now being in the Big 12. I'm just excited to have fans to actually talk crap to and like make fun of and have more than three fans on Twitter to interact with. Like we have not really been able to cross paths much with the Kansas fan base, but it'll be a lot nicer than talking to the two Wichita State fans that are existing on the internet. So I'm really excited for those games against all these Big 12 teams, for people to come to Cincinnati to experience, obviously, the tailgate, the stadium, just the atmosphere too. And I'm really excited for basketball season because I think Cincinnati, and we can talk about this in basketball season, but I do think that Cincinnati can get back up to where we were in those heydays of the 90s when Cincinnati and Kansas did play once, I believe, in the tournament.
Oh gosh, but yeah, don't get me started on basketball because we could be here for another 3 hours. So but no, you know, in the spirit of, as you put it, trash talking on the internet with fans, I will say I'm sorry, but Skyline Chili is not chili.
Well, we agree it's not chili. It is like perfect for a Coney for the dog, you know, put it on as a topper for a hot dog. I understand if you don't like it, you know, Chiefs and Bengals fans, we do have some other stuff to rival about, but you know, if you don't want to try it, that's fine. We've got a lot of good.
Oh, no, here. I have tried it.
Yeah,
it's not for me. Okay. You know, I also worked at Steak and Shake where they have a chili mac that is, they literally take spaghetti noodles and put their chili on it. And it's not good either. So it's the concept of putting chili on spaghetti and trying to call it chili.
Yeah,
and good food.
I'm not really a fan of that either. I'm more of a Coney and the Skyline Chilito, which is chili and cheese and onion wrapped up into tortilla.
Knock the five way. Just don't knock it. It's the best thing on the menu.
It's just not my thing. It's just not my thing. But for Kansas fans, if you don't want to try our lovely chili, you should definitely try some of our local breweries and Grater's Ice Cream. Been making it for 150 years out of French pots. It's really good.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to hopefully being able to travel out there for the game at the end of the year. We'll have to see how the travel budget lines up with that. But all right, I think that's going to do it for us today, guys. Thank you so much for joining me. Where can people find your guys' work online? Oh, that's hilarious.
There we go.
You guys froze on my screen with like a half smirk on your face, and it was hilarious. Oh. Anyway, so for anyone that wants to find your guys' work, where is the best place to do that online?
Yeah, you can find us on pretty much any platform you could want to listen to us on, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. You can find us on YouTube. We do a lot of video content. We are pushing a lot of video content through TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter as well. Now X, and we also do post-game spaces. Always Twitter. Yes. Thank you. And we do post-game spaces, after games live, to kind of get fan reaction. And you know, the in the moment feel. So for all of that, You can find us at Viva La Cats Pod. That is for everything to make it nice and easy. And if you need to know what to look for a red background with a gray pissed off bear cat.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Well, that is going to do it. Thank you so much for joining me. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not already, please do go out wherever you get your podcast, where it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. No, not Stitcher anymore. I keep doing that. They have shut down now. No more Stitcher. But any of the other million apps that are out there, you can search for Rock Chalk Podcast and get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you can give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments would be absolutely fantastic. But if for whatever reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys, get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We are, of course, part of the fantastic 10-12 podcast network covering all the teams in the Big 12, including the new ones that are coming in next year. We said that last year, and now there's more of them to talk about. So, but go over to 1012network.com. You can find links to all the great shows we have over there. Make sure you guys visit our sponsor, Charlie Hustle. Really glad to be working with them this year. And, of course, Prize Picks. But that's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.